Okay, well, let's try this. Let's do a informal QST and open up Tech Tuesday and see how far it goes. This is KJ6KDL. I guess I'll be acting as net control and hand it off to anybody else. Last week, a week ago Sunday actually, an update to a secure socket layer program called OpenSSL was sent out. And you know what happens when these updates go out? The explanation of how the exploit works goes out with it. So everyone who is running this product that patched something called OpenSSL suddenly needs to patch their product because somebody who gets a hold of this code who's thinking in a bad way could exploit their program, possibly. What do you think? KI6IQA, Kelly, you still there?
I am. Excuse the long pause. We're right in the middle of putting dinner together, so I heard one thing. You said one thing, and I heard another. So I beg your forgiveness, but proceed. I'm on the side. If you're talking computers, I'm way behind in the times. If you want to talk 2x4s and 16 penny nails, I'm circles around me.
I understand. I'll try not to make it too technical. So, well, let me open up and see if anybody wants to make a comment. So, those of you who surf the internet, sometimes you notice your URL at the top of your browser starts with HTTPS, as in Sam, or in this case, secure, :// on a website name. And that's what it stands for. You're on a secure connection. Supposed to keep your data encrypted and not viewable by other people. So this makes things like doing bank transactions, working with your finances, or any other personal data that you transfer supposedly not viewable by others, you know, to a reasonable degree. And Microsoft uses a embedded program called Secure Socket Layer, or SSL, and programs that do not want to use this need another product. And usually Linux-based programs and applications that do not want to run Microsoft's software happen to use one that's very popular called OpenSSL for Secure Socket Layer. Even though there's another protocol, those who know the difference, there's something called TLS, and that's Transport Layer Security, but SSL is still the acronym. So it turns out that a bunch of people decided they did not want to spend money to run the SSL version, the Microsoft version, and they went with the free version. And, well, this is open source, and you're supposed to donate money. And turned out that one of the people contributing code had injected a bug a couple of 3 years ago, and it allowed some exploits to happen. I'll take a break and see if anybody has any questions. Go ahead.
KJ6KDL. Yeah, I'm not into computers. I don't know. Just enough to get on the internet, look around, but I know a lot of people that are really deep into them, and I always thought that on the open source stuff, way, the generators were really thorough and calmed everything out before they put it out on the general public and kept it pretty clean. KJ6KDL.
Yes, Harold. Yeah, that's a good point. Generally, sometimes you get what you pay for, and other times just because you paid for it doesn't mean you got the best. And yes, that's true. When you work with it in the open source community, it's generally a bunch of volunteers or people who work for donations, you know, the shareware or donate option. You'll notice a lot of these programs you download that are supposed to be free, they'll ask you to please donate to the cause so they can earn a living. And when not enough people do that, sometimes you go on a volunteer basis, and some people may not be as good as others, and they may not be smart enough to notice that they have done something incorrectly, possibly. And if you don't get somebody good enough to cross-reference or review the work, you know, issues may come through in the code. And yeah, that happens in a commercial environment when people are out to make a profit. Sometimes they'll cut corners and not do as good a job, or they'll let bugs go out intentionally. And sometimes the code is just that complex that it's hard to find it all until it's out in the open. But this happens no matter who writes code. Unless you're really, really good, you know, we're all human, there could be an error. And you get enough people reviewing, you can catch these errors, and it turns out there was one. I'll take another break. Thanks, Harold, and anybody else. This is KJ6KDL for an impromptu and informal Tech Tuesday. Okay, I'm not hearing anybody, but just in case somebody's listening, I will offer this to the best of my knowledge. Let's see here. Well, as Harold pointed out, most of us use our computers and do things and trust that other entities or that we work with are doing their due diligence and doing everything properly. And for the most part, they are. In various industries, not everybody can do everything, so we will buy products off the shelf, we will download products off the internet, we will hire somebody to write code to help us out to get our products to the market. And in this case, we're talking about web-based services, and you know, there's applications out that when you log in, you get a secure page, and you can do your stuff. And that's important. And until somebody says there's a problem with that product, we don't assume there is one. And then when somebody finds there's a problem, we get updates. Just like Microsoft patches the Windows every month until it's obsolete, as we just ran into this month. And we do the same thing. Adobe Acrobat Reader has known issues. The Adobe Flash, which used to be Macromedia, has issues. The Oracle Java code gets issues and exploits all the time. You name it. If the program's on the internet and it's popular, somebody's going to write an exploit for it. So eventually we'll need to patch it, and this needs to be patched. But what happened in this case? This was encrypted data with sensitive information going back and forth on large entities, and it was stuff that's used to control our stuff. And it's not restricted to just one small company. This affected Yahoo. So those of us who are on the CERT or ECS forums, we log into Yahoo. We need to change our passwords because the code was updated. And it means that possibly before the update, somebody could have extracted our data. It's not that they did. It's possible. I'll take a break for any questions. This is KJ6KDL. Okay, that was a long break. I don't know if anybody is out there. Maybe you heard me talking and said, "Oh no, it's Jim. Let me turn the radio off. I'll never understand him." What else can we talk about for another few minutes? At least I'll try to make it to 7:15. And I'm looking for a list of companies that have known exploits. And there is a CERT group that is not the same CERT that we do here for emergency response that has a website up. Amazon was affected by this exploit. If you have an Amazon account, you need to log in and change your password, just because it's possible somebody could have extracted your ID and password sometime in the past. Not that it happened. Unfortunately, this is not traceable. Somebody has figured out that they can exploit this this vulnerability, and there's people out on the internet that are boasting they have code that will do this, but no one really knows for sure how successful this has been. So if you use Linux, FreeBSD, there's an update for FreeBSD, Fedora Linux, the Fedora project, Debian, GNU Linux. There's something called Beware. Not sure if that's a Linux flavor. If you use Attachmate, which some people have scanners that scan to the internet, I think Attachmate does that. I'll have to look them up. I'm just going off the list. There's a lot of exploits out there. And it doesn't mean that you did anything wrong. It's the people you trusted to give you something happened to have something that had a flaw in it, and it wasn't known until recently. Some people say that this exploit has existed for possibly over 2 years, but it wasn't until this year somebody was able to actually prove that this flaw exists. This is KJ6KDL for an impromptu and informal Tech Tuesday. I'll take a break, see if there's anybody out there who is having questions or just wants me to stop talking tech.
KJ6RAY Mobile.
RAY, Ray, did you want to come in with a question or a comment?
KI6IQA, let me see if I've got it.
Yeah, I was just thinking about those passwords and maybe changing passwords every week would help secure your data there. And I also want to find out something about the XP Now that's not being supported by Microsoft any longer back in their gym.
Okay, yeah, and I heard Kelly out there. I'll get back to you in just a second. Yeah, and Ray, that's something that I think I mentioned last week. I think the operating system is pretty secure right now. It's the stuff that gets out on the internet, like Internet Explorer or any other program you use that is internet-centric. Even Adobe Reader, you open up PDFs online, Microsoft Office. Those are going to be the ones that are going to be your point of issue, and it suggested that you do something like Firefox or Google Chrome for your web browser and keep your other stuff updated, and not use an account that logs in as a local administrator, which could be a pain. But yeah, changing your password every week, if it's really secure, long, say 10, 12, 15 characters, you should be good. You know, it's going to be difficult, you know, run it 3-6 months, depending on how often you use it. The more you log in, the more likely it could be exploited. Let me give Kelly, KI6IQA, a chance here. This is KJ6KDL.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Remember, let off the key once in a while and take a breath. Vicki was saying that, you know, she's standing here listening. So she was wanted to say that this is good information, and she's listening, although, you know, quite a bit of it's kind of over my head or whatever. It's not over hers. There is a computer techie in the house. So thank you from third-party traffic, and proceed. You know, a good fallback on just, you know, if Tom doesn't want to run something, we can always talk about disappearing Big Bear. And I'm sure that although people... I'm not coming up with any call signs, but BBL Bill and definitely Tom Monroe and George down there in the desert. Some of these people have been here longer than I have, and we can talk about things that used to be here and, you know, what the landscape used to look like. Yes, exactly.
Oh, very good. Yes, we did do one not too long ago that... We talked about the way things used to be here, and I think we even talked about the snow and the lack thereof and all that. But, Vicki has a good point. I know I tend to be long-winded, and I've got a 2-minute and 30-second beeper that comes on and says I'm about to time out the repeater when I get going. There's a lot of apps. I'm talking and digging at the same time because I sent myself some links. things that are exploited that we should know about, things that we use, and is beyond our control because it's not on our system. One thing that Vicky may use that's now a Cisco product, and Cisco has some hardware, wireless APs and access control gateways, routers, and their WebEx product. If you have a WebEx account, Cisco WebEx meeting server had to be patched. So I don't know who's going to really exploit that, any of the WebEx node stuff, but if you use it, somebody could set up a meeting on your behalf. I don't, and so that's something to think about. But yeah, there's some Cisco data switches inside the network. You know, it's probably going to be a smaller issue, but firewalls and routers, yeah, that could be an issue. So you need to look and see. And our smartphones, Android, if you have an Android phone, I know I'll take a breath there somewhere, go to your settings, scroll down to About Phone, and scroll near the bottom and check your OS version. If you're on version 4.1.1, you have a problem. You could be exploited. 4.1.2 came out just recently, and I think 4.1.3 did. And if you're a very old version, like version 2-something, you're good. All right, I'll take a break and see if anybody has any questions or comments. This is KJ6KDL.
W6POO.
Chip, go ahead.
Hi there. I appreciate you picking up Tech Tuesday. Last week when you gave, I can't find my notes, but I wrote down the name of that website, and I updated the couple of websites, and I got to like 17 characters, and it said something outrageous, like it would take, five centuries to figure out what the password would be. So I started doing that to all of the important websites and anything that has a credit card and or otherwise financing. But it seemed to be really good information, and I tossed a little note out to Tom on that. So thanks for all of that. W6POO.
Oh, Chip, thanks for that. I was a little late getting the audio up. I did let that run long for anybody who missed last Tuesday's Tech Tuesday. It's an hour and 58 minutes long. I think we ran at about an hour and 20, 21 minutes. And I did not list the URLs in the general description, so I'll update that tonight, even if I don't get this audio up right away. That was GRC.com. Steve Gibson's Gibson Research Center has a website called Haystack, GRC.com/haystack.htm. You can do a Google search for GRC space Haystack. And what that does is, and it's a secure site. This guy's a security guy. He's done his website correctly, and he has some really good tools. You can type in a password that you use, and it will tell you most likely how good it is or bad it is and how likely it is to be cracked, and give you some suggestions and pointers for how to create a good password. And near the bottom, they talk about a really interesting thing called entropy, which some of you may know the definition of, but basically, for the interest of setting passwords, it's talking about randomization. You use a random password generator, it puts out a bunch of random numbers, letters, pluses, dollar signs, whatever, and you tell it, make it 12, 15 characters long, and you'll never remember that. But say you have a favorite phrase, I like chocolate chip ice cream with mustard on top, and you take all those letters, and you put them down, and you make some capital, make some lowercase, add a period here, and a dash there, and a tilde, and you memorize that, and then maybe that's 8 characters. And then you go to Amazon, and you have a phrase for Amazon or a number. And so you use that what you call a hash set, and you type that in, and then add something that represents Amazon to you. And then you go to your Twitter account, and you add something for Twitter. As long as you don't tell anybody what your little hash is, it's just as secure as letting the random number generator do it, and it's an easier way to remember things. I'll take a break, see if anybody has any questions. This is KJ6KDL.
quick question, actually. The random password generator, is that that's an app that is on the GRC Space Haystack website?
Oh, KJ6KDK is reminding me that Steve Gibson has put a random character generator up there, a random password generator that I wasn't aware of. I was going to mention there's some out there, like we use a program called KeePass, K-E-E-P-A-S-S. It's open source. It runs locally on your computer, and it keeps it in like a spreadsheet list of tables with an outline on the side. You can categorize them. You open it up, and it generates a random password. And you can go in and tell it, I want capitals and lowercase and numbers and brackets and special functions, and tell it to generate up, you know, as many, the default is 20 characters, and you can move it around. Some websites say, I can only take up to 15, or I can only take up to 12. And then you save them, and you put a password on that database, and you memorize that password so you can get into the database, and it's portable. You can run it from a flash drive. There's some on the internet. What's the other one? WinPass?
LastPass.
Is one that's up on the internet, and there's a free version and a pay-for version. You can log in anywhere. I have my personal ideas about that, but still a good option. That was a good question. This is KJ6KDL. Anyone else?
6DL.
Go ahead, Harold.
You're like I am, and you have a problem memorizing anything like a password or numbers. I have really big problems with memorizing numbers. I have a steno notebook that is dedicated to just whenever I think of something I want to look up on the internet, I scribble it down in that. And whenever I look it up, I cross it off. But in the back cover, I have all my passwords for what few things I use, like VA hospital and email, that kind of thing. But as long as it's something that nobody else is going to get their hands on, and even if you don't write it, I can look at mine, I know what they are. I know what they're for, rather. And so you don't have to write down exactly what they're for. It's just put them there and you have them so you can go back and try them. 8060.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, and there is something to be said for, in an emergency, sometimes you may not have electricity or internet, so it's nice to have a hard copy. Even if you print it out and put it in a locked area or a hidden area where only you can get to it, that is true. And one other thing that Leo Laporte said on KFI, which I agree with, and I have done myself. When you sign up for something on a website, sometimes they ask you to give yourself security questions and answers. Sometimes you make them up yourself, and sometimes they give you something to answer, and they're always the same. Mother's maiden name, your best friend in school, and your favorite food, and your car, and your first pet, and all that. Some of that you can't be known. If you start talking on your Facebook account, people may figure that stuff out. So when I answer those, what's your mother's maiden name? I may put meatball spaghetti, and you know, that's going to be difficult to figure out. What's your favorite food? I don't know, star cluster, you know, whatever, bagels, and you know, something off the wall, rubber tires. You know, so that way you can keep that list, so you know the answer if you ever ask. But somebody else could have a really difficult time, even if you put in some gibberish. This is KJ6KDL. Anyone else?
It's W6BOO. I did the same thing that Harold was talking about. I wrote down in a notebook all of the passwords and all of, and I update it often, but I keep it inside a fireproof safe that I have over in the office. So. Yeah, and the key is hidden, all that kind of good stuff. But I think it's good to write them down because I've changed. ever since last week, I've changed probably 25 or 30 passwords, and there's no way I could memorize all of them, but it's a good idea. You know, I can write them down, and we're someplace that's safe. W6POO.
Absolutely, absolutely. Do it safely. For those of you who like to do encrypt files, so that if you put them on, say, a flash drive, and one day you're walking down the street and you find there's a hole in your pocket and you lost your flash drive, everything on it, somebody could read. There's encryption programs you use. One that's really good called TrueCrypt, TrueCrypt. It's on SourceForge. Oh, which, by the way, SourceForge was exploited. Anybody has a login account on SourceForge.net? that's another one. There's some list out there. Maybe I can get some links up on the page when I'm done. You can create an encrypted file. You give it a file assignment size, so many megabytes or so, and you can log into it and it creates a drive letter on that, an extra drive letter, and you have to put in your password to get to that, and you can store all sorts of stuff in there. And that way, if somebody finds your flash drive, they can't get to that file. And in fact, it can even encrypt your entire flash drive so that you can't even see the contents of the flash drive until you use TrueCrypt. But then you have to have TrueCrypt installed on the computer you're using it on, so it makes it a little difficult. So I like making an encrypted file and then sticking stuff in there I don't want anybody else to get to, that I can carry around with me, and in the event I possibly lose it or somebody manages to abscond with it, but while I'm not looking, what's on there would be virtually useless to them. They'd be better off just reformatting the flash drive and having fun for whatever the $15 or $20 it costs to replace it. This is KJ6KDL, an impromptu and open Tech Tuesday. Anybody have any questions, comments, new topics?
UB6L2X.
CY, go ahead.
Yeah, I was reading about that today because I was a little bit concerned. I saw that come out last week called the heart bleed bug. And apparently it was actually discovered independently by two different groups. But in any case, I did inquire with my banking institution, and you know they say they haven't found any issues, but they say go ahead and probably would be a good idea to change your password. But my question is, if they're in the process of trying to discover their vulnerabilities and they haven't found them yet, or they haven't certified their systems, and you go in and you change your password, aren't you still in the same situation until they can fix it? It's KB6L20.
Exactly. Yeah, that's. I heard that Wednesday morning. I'd taken the week off of work. Rosemary had knee surgery, and I was actually getting ready to pick her up from the hospital, and ABC tossed out that little blurb. And it's called heart bleed because it's based on a protocol that does a function that's nicknamed heartbeat. And not to get too technical, it was a function that would be nice, and it's not very useful, and I guess it shouldn't have been in there in the first place. And So, this is what's happening. I've got products on my server that's working inside, so it's not an issue that I don't know if I've validated yet. I have to check with the vendor. You buy these software packages, and to save money, they've injected them inside the product. McAfee Antivirus put out a patch. I've installed that. The VirusGate Enterprise on your workstation. So, yeah, until we figure out exactly where these products were implemented, and if the version was in that small range, a small version that was lasted for 2 years and it didn't have a lot of updates, if that version was in the application that we're putting our passwords into, then you're correct. Until it's fixed, you can change your password, and it's possible that if somebody's actually exploiting this vulnerability, yes, your password could be stolen again. So if you don't do anything with the machine, you don't transact with it, then your transaction data is not going to be in the data area that they're able to extract, so it won't see your activity. So, yeah, that's, I'm not telling everybody stop banking with your bank, but yeah, that's true. Unless they can absolutely say we have validated this is or is not the case, changing your password may be a moot point. This is KJ6KDL. Back to Impromptu Tech Tuesday in the group. Anyone else?
K6KDL.
Yeah, go ahead, Harold.
I think it was Monday morning. I was on Breitbart and Drudge both, so I'm not sure which one it was on because I was skimming through it to see what I was interested in. And not knowing what Heartbleed concerned and the name of some of these stupid movies, I thought possibly it was something to do with the movie, but it was... It seems to me what I remember of it was either our government or one of the European governments got scanned on that. I think that apparently they were using something that was used on, and maybe somebody got their junk. I don't know. 86PL. Be worth checking.
Yeah, and that's going to be the... a hard thing. I did see an FDIC report that was confidential. I can't really say too much about it, but it was basically telling people if you're using this product, this is how you patch it, and what they've noticed. And actually, for those who like to read, if you know of a website called theregister.co.uk, the European Register, they have a fun to read and fairly intuitive article called Anatomy of OpenSSL's Heartbleed. They, for those who like to get techie on that, that's an interesting article from April 9th. And, for the most part, this is the thing. Only two entities, Cisco, who does all this tracking, and then there's one government entity, had the tracking actually invoked and had enough backups to go back 2 years to say they cannot find any evidence of this exploit being performed. But it wasn't really publicly known until a week ago Sunday when the update started coming out. So there's rumor that even the NSA was using this and they're denying it. I get a SANS.org, S-A-N-S.org, email letter twice a week, and it's one of these things that you have to go out of your way to even have traceability on this, and it's one of these, it's like a random grab bag, it's like a strobe light going off randomly, and then you see what you see when the strobe light goes off, and these people keep asking for little chunks of information, and they don't know what they're going to get, and it's usually gibberish. But there, as Christy was saying, there were two groups. There was one in particular that posted they were attacking their own server from inside the network, and they were able to get some data off of it. And how that could be exploited over the internet exclusively with the way the networks are set up, yeah, it's hard to tell. But if you feel paranoid, change your password, because if they did capture data at one point and you change your password, then, I'm going to have to retract it. If you change it now, then if they have your old password, they may not have gotten your new password, but you may have to change it every week until you know for sure that they're clean. And I'm seeing more and more vendors every day sending me emails, we check out okay. So I have a feeling, for the most part, we're going to be in good shape. It's just one of those wake-up calls. This could have been really bad. This is KJ6KDL with Impromptu Tech Tuesday. Back to the group.
I have a quick question. The backup systems that people are using, making copies of what's on their hard drive, but they're doing it up to a cloud. How safe is that? I mean, I've wondered about, because I know a lot of people that are using various, I can't think of the names, but to go online and Google it real quick, but. What's the information on those backup cloud companies? Any advice on those?
Yeah, in general, so we use a Well, I'm having a mind blank here. I was hoping the wife would be here to remind me. We're using an online backup group. The one that Leo Laporte likes is called Carbonite. The word carbon and an IT at the end. And since he's Leo Laporte knows them really well, he knows the owner. He was talking about them this weekend frequently, and they've already validated they don't use any of the OpenSSL product, and they are clean. The data is using a secure socket layer or TLS protocol, and they're a substantiated company. Their encryption techniques are really good. Getting your data up to them, it's encrypted on your most of these work like that. And we use another one called CrashPlan. At the time we bought this last year, it had some advantages over Carbonite, and they've recently changed so they're similar. But basically what they do is they encrypt your data on your side and send the encrypted data across an encrypted channel to a storage location, and it's stored with your encryption. So your de-encryption information is in your account, and without your account information, they can't decrypt it, and they don't store your password, so they can't. And that's important. And any website that can give you your password back if you forgot it, that's a bad website. They should never be able to give you a password back, especially in clear text. So we got an email from CrashPlan. The actual backup server system itself was good, but there was a web portal you could go in and look at metrics, and that was using OpenSSL. So if you ever used the web portal on CrashPlan, that would have been an issue. We've never used it, but we were looking at the possibility of changing our password just to be proactive. Those two I know. If your system is backing up your data in real time, you're good. I know I went another 2 minutes there. This is KJ6KDL. Back to the group, and that was a very good question, and I encourage everybody, spend your $5 a month, or if you buy like 4 years for us, it was $4 a month. Get your data backed up, because if your computer implodes, you can buy a new one, but that data you got, yeah, you got to get it back.
Yeah, that was the name, W60OO. That was the name of the company that these guys I know were using. And they rant and rave about it. They can't say enough good stuff about it. So I was going to, now that you've mentioned it, all the more I'll be looking into that. And, because, yeah, you're right, absolutely. I've got one HP, one regular PC, and two Macs. And, if I lost the information on either of those, it would be pretty pretty bad. So I'll look into that. Thanks. W6DOO, back to the group.
All right, Chip, thanks. And, yeah, for those who are interested, who are techie, the CrashPlan, what I liked about that one that was different, there were two things. At the time, there was a throttling if you went over a certain number of, like, 200 or 300 gigabytes, and we have 1.5 terabytes up there now. It would start throttling you. And CrashPlan did not, but CrashPlan also adds a feature. We have one computer. I put in a mirrored set of drives. I usually prefer a RAID array, but in this case I did a mirror because it's just a workstation. But we can back that up, and we can attach a USB device and then back that up as well and take that USB device off and add another USB device and then back that one up. And they say it's literally unlimited, and we haven't tried to take advantage of that. We've got enough storage on our current system to back up everything. And I encourage that. The data you create is the stuff that cannot be reinstalled. Applications, yeah, you can get that. But if you've created pictures, drawings, written novels, whatever you've done, you lose that, you've lost your creativity. So, yeah, get that backed up. And, yeah, those guys are good. And so that was a neat topic to switch over to, because that's kind of going into password security, data security. This is all important, and, yeah, the more we get on the Internet, the more we use computers, the more important this is going to be. Wow, we've got 40 minutes in. I didn't think we were going to last this long. Anybody else have any questions? This is KJ6KDL.
KB6L2R.
Yeah, Christy, go ahead.
Yeah, great Tech Tuesday. Anyway, this may be real simple. I've discovered on my laptop, which has Windows 7, and all the other PCs I have are either Linux, Mint, or XP, but just recently discovered when I get on the internet, I use Firefox, by the way, there's an auto redirect that's happening. It's going to a website that says I need to update something, and I, for some reason, clicked on it at one time. It was annoying. I thought maybe it was something attacking me, and I finally clicked on it, and my virus software came up real quickly and said they detected something, so I got rid of it. But it keeps doing this, and I've done virus scanner scans. It's updated with virus and also malware, and there's nothing been detected. I don't know if it's a virus or not. KB6 something.
Sorry. Yeah, GZ, I acknowledge. Yeah, I'll make one comment here, and we may be on the same path. It may be just a URL redirector, but malware just. I've taken the position now. I like to back up my data, and if I ever suspect my computer's acting quirky, I never am really sure if I got it all off of there. I prefer to go through the painstaking, and sometimes it takes several weeks to finish rebuilding my machine. And I am a techie guy, so I have a spare hard drive hanging around almost all the time, and I will pull a drive and then load the OS from scratch and then move my environment over bit by bit, and sometimes I will not reinstall something that I found it was not useful. And yeah, it's annoying and painful, but some of this malware is just tenacious, and if you're really not sure it's just a software redirect from your browser or URL redirect, then it might be time to make sure your data is backed up and do the reinstall, because I know people who can claim they can fix it, and some people can do it, and you're just never really sure. Yeah, GZI, go ahead.
I just had a problem with conduit, and if you watch when your search browser comes up, and you watch off the top, if it says conduit up there, you've got it, over.
All right, so this is a possibly an infected website, a server, and it's hit with something that says conduit.
Conduit just kind of takes over, and I got rid of everything except I still get music once in a while when I don't want it, and I haven't figured out where that's coming from, over.
Okay, yeah, I see, Microsoft has something on that, so it looks like it's about a year old. Conduit malware came in with an Adobe Flash Player. That was real popular a year ago. You get these phony Adobe Flash Player or Adobe Reader updates, and it would look legitimate, and you would click on it, and it would not be the Adobe update. It would be malware injection. There's a bunch of stuff you could try to run. Microsoft has their malicious software removal tool called MRT, Melvin Raven Tom, and you can open up a run line and type MRT, and it should come up. I don't think you have to run it from a command line. You can run their security software. It's not the greatest. It's free. Malware Bytes, you can run that. You can go to look for House Call. I think it's trendmicro.net has a local service that loads an agent and will scan your computer and look. You can try all those. There's quite a few, and I'm just never really sure that it's all out of there. That's the other problem. You get to a website with an old server that has been exploited, and you end up on that server either by typo or it's a local server that you maybe want to look at the band showing up in Lucerne Valley, and this guy has an old server in his closet, and he's not keeping it up to date, and it gets infected because a bot found it and had an exploit because it wasn't patched, and you get there, and now you've got it, and you have to deal with it. So it's just so difficult. I use a search engine to search for websites anymore, because if I make a typo, Google and Yahoo will ask, is this what you really meant? And then I can decide whether or not I want to go to where I really typed. So anyway, yeah, that was a good question, and I see that conduit Yeah, there's a, if you do a search on Microsoft, there is a place that gives you some links to try to remove it, and you can give it a shot. Yeah, it may work. This is KJ6KDL on Impromptu Tech Tuesday. Back to the group. Yeah, go ahead, Harold.
The question you're talking about, which search engines you use that are reliable for giving you a little warning. How about Bing, B-I-N-G? That's the default on Windows 8.1, 86 beyond.
Yeah, that's Microsoft's new search tool. I don't know, I'm a little old school. I know they've gotten really good, and Microsoft is pushing their search engine. But I have to say, back in the day, 5, 6, 8 years ago, if you wanted to get fly-by adware injections, you went to the MSN page. Microsoft Security Network is what it used to stand for. And you're almost guaranteed, because they don't control those fly-by ads. Those are third-party servers that pay them money to be there, and Yahoo would be the next. But Yahoo's gotten really good, and they're not as popular, so I guess they're not there. But Google is the standard. But pick the one you like. If it gives you the answers you like, yeah, use it. Bing is pretty good. If I search under Microsoft's website for TechNet stuff long enough, eventually I'll end up on the Bing search engine, and I still get good answers. But I don't know, I've kind of gotten used to Google, and until it shows me as not being the one to do, that's the one I tend to go with. But I don't think there's anything wrong with Bing. It's just the flavor. This is KJ6KDL. Back to the group.
V6LTR.
Hey, go ahead, Christy.
Just to close the loop, thanks for that hint. I did go down there and do a search on MRT, and I did another scan with it. It says no malicious software was detected. But that was, I guess, the quick scan, and I'll go back and do a full scan. But perhaps it looks like I'm not infected by this. So I did find some other additional hints on the net, on the web for possible solutions to this. There was quite a bit of discussion on this redirect issue. So anyway, I'll see what I can find out. KB6LTY, thank you.
Yeah, Christy, and that's a good point. There's what I see tend to happen on here is if you install something that throws in a toolbar, like the Oracle Java update, we use that in-house for some internal products, so it's not giving us any issues on the internet. But once in a while, it will trigger a user to run the update on their own instead of my update servers. And if they run it and they don't pay attention, there's a little box to check that says, I like the Ask toolbar and the Ask search engine, ASK.com. And they're not paying any attention, and all of a sudden they get this weird toolbar stuff and they get new search engine things. Check and see what you have in your toolbar. If you're using Internet Explorer, under the Tools menu, you'll see Manage Add-ons. And you can look through there and see if you have any toolbars or extensions. The LYNC browser, the Groove browser. If you have Microsoft Office, you'll see an Office document cache handler. Those are default Microsoft stuff. Shockwave Flash Object will come in, but if you start seeing some other weird stuff, yeah, you might want to try to disable it and see if that helps. You may have to find somebody to help you to remove it if you can't find the remover. Search providers. Check the search providers if you're in there, if anybody's been following me on the Manage Add-ons. You can have more than one search provider in the modern Internet Explorer browsers, and you can pick the order, which one is default. Bing will be first, and then whichever ones you select. I like Google to be default. If I load the McAfee Site Advisor, it'll switch me to Yahoo, and I'll have to go switch it back, and then after a while it'll complain and try to get me back to Yahoo again. And it's, so, yeah, you put that in. I think if you do Adobe Reader, if you're not paying attention, you'll get Google Chrome as your default browser. That may be fine for most people. For the office, it really messes up Outlook. So those of you who use Outlook, if you uninstall the Google Chrome, you will have some issues combing. So we've run into that. It's kind of a tricky workaround. But, yeah, see if you can find some stuff on the search engines, and maybe it's just one of those simple redirects. That was a very good question, and I hope some of the people were listening, because I'm sure you are not alone. This is hitting lots of people. KJ6KDL, Tech Tuesday in the group. Back to anybody.
KJ6DCT.
And LCS.
Okay, there were three people. BZT, somebody got stepped on, and LCS. So let's start with BZT, and then after BZT, we'll go with whoever got stepped on.
Good evening to the net. This is Tom, KJ6DZT, Desert Hot Springs. How reliable is Defender, and what's your comment on NOD to the 32?
All right, here's my comment on any antivirus program. Treat it like your safety belts and airbags in your car. It will not stop you from crashing. It might protect you in the event of a crash, and then again, it might not. So antivirus is the last line of defense. The best line of defense is your security settings and your brain. Pay attention when you're on the internet. It's so easy to look and say, hey, that's bankofamerica.com. That's where I want to go, and it's Bank of Amarkia. And you click on it, and you're on the Palau Islands getting exploited, and then you type in your ID and password, and your money disappears, and then your bank has to pay you back, and then the employees don't get their raises. So NOD 32, it's advertised by Leo. It's a lightweight antivirus program, and it will do a lot to try to help. The stuff built into Microsoft is for the casual user. It'll catch most flybys, but the really good guys are going to be ahead of the curve on that, so be safe. And if anybody knows how to program your router settings or your network adapter settings for DNS IP addresses, where you type in an address name and it resolves it, there is a website called OpenDNS, and you can use their servers. They have some basic filters for free. You go to OpenDNS, I think it's .org, and do a search on that. And on their front page, they'll give you two IP addresses to type in if you know how to do it, and it will filter it. So if you type something that's a typo, like Bank of Amarkia, and it's a known bad site, it will stop you. It's really good at that. It's not perfect, because there's always new websites coming out. But yes, antivirus, get something. AVG free, you know, you get what you pay for, but the known brands, I'm just not a Norton antivirus or McAfee for the casual home user. The security suites that they sell you are bloated, and I've seen too many computers when it gets close to renewal. You cannot hardly surf the internet until you uninstall antivirus, not even to renew. So I'm really not a fan of those. I prefer NOD 32 over those and some of the others that are out there. Good question. All right, there was somebody who got stepped on. Are you still out there? This is KJ6KDL. Back to the group. Okay, I'm not sure. Maybe I just heard some other transmit noise. LCS, Clint, go ahead. This is KJ6KDL.
I learned more in the last 6 minutes than in months of reading. Thank you. And I just tuned in, and we just got through with our people training for our new dog. A friend of mine, new system, did not go to Mozilla.org to download Firefox, and the package he downloaded that was Firefox had six adware, not spyware, but the adware nonsense, reg cleaner, pay us $19.99, six programs embedded with it. So if you're going to use an alternative browser, go to Google to get Chrome. Go to Mozilla to get Firefox.
Absolutely. Yeah, there was one of the ones out there that those downloads, I can't think of it. I don't think it was CNET. I don't think it was Two Cows. I don't think it was Major Geeks. But it was one of these popular websites that you can download stuff from, and they have been known to embed adware into the program. And find the official sites. Use your search engines to search for the product and find the ones that look like they're legit. And you can look at the extensions. Some of those are not as easy to notice, but if it ends in like .ru for Romania or .pa for the Palau Islands, probably not a good place to download it from. It might not be what you're expecting. And if you're looking for free music and movies, yeah, good luck. Not only is that not legal under the current U.S. laws to be downloading stuff you're not paying for in that realm, but the sites that do that are enticing you because they know what you want. And that's the other thing. Social engineering, we can do a whole topic on that. Wherever the majority of people are, that's where exploits are going to be. The social sites, the BitTorrent sites for massive downloads. So, yeah, if you know your way around, you might be good enough to get through there. If you're not and you're a newbie in those genres, just be careful. Somebody sent me a link on Facebook, just signed up on that last month with the wife, or 2 months ago, and somebody sent me a link, you've got to look at this, it's amazing, and I hovered over and I saw where it was going, and sure enough, I hit the refresh a couple times, and Facebook flagged it as a malicious site, and that was really cool that it did it, but for the first couple of minutes, it was not. So, yeah, use your brain. Antivirus is good. It's kind of like a safety. Put in as many safeties in as you can, because we all get tired. Sometimes we don't pay attention, and we're going to make a mistake, and that's what they plan on, the time we make a mistake. This is KJ6KDL. Whoa, 4 minutes to eight. Anybody else have any questions or comments before I close the net?
KJ6KDL, KJ6QIN, mobile.
Yeah, Shelly, go ahead.
This has been fascinating. Our son is pursuing a degree in information technology, but he's not a teacher. So I learned a lot from you tonight and the group. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm glad this was useful. I talked with Tom. He suggested I get on and see what happens. He had another commitment and wasn't going to be able to make it. And let's give it a shot. It'll go nowhere. It'll go somewhere. And, I know this is not ham radio yet, but software-defined radio is down the stream. And some of us, we don't have cable modems attached to our broadband device. We may be using our smartphones, our Android phones. By the way, if you have an Apple, anything, Apple OS and iOS, does not use OpenSSL, so the Apple products themselves are not exploitable by this Heartbleed virus, the OpenSSL issue, so you're good, but they do claim that if you download an app that uses it, all bets are off for whatever that app does, so they do their best to validate the programs, but remember, this was a not-so-well-known issue that had popped up last week that has everybody stepping and fetching, and I think the big point to make is it's hard for anybody to know if this exploit has even taken place. So it's basically everyone's covering their back ends, because as soon as an update comes out, the text that says how the exploit works comes out with it, and then the bad guys know how to exploit it. And the fact that they have to have so many bots out to just constantly hit specific servers to even get enough data to eventually truncate it into something useful makes it so that the probability that this was exploited is very small. And even if it was 0.1%, with the billions of packets of data running around the internet every second, that's a lot of data that could have been exploited if it was. So just remember, chances are you're not in trouble right now, but everybody's doing their due diligence. We're all going to get updated. All the companies that have software are going to do their thing. And just keep on it. If you change your password today and then you get an email in 2 days from one of the companies that says we found a problem, we fixed it, you may have to change your password again, possibly. What's the likelihood? In volume, who knows? So, yeah, this was a good Tech Tuesday, and everybody keep your computer safe, do your safe interneting, and if you have a business, have a good computer for business, and get a junker one for getting on the internet and causing havoc, and even shut down your business computer just in case, so that you can take your junker and shut it off. Yeah, it's an extra computer, but... Oh, with the group. QST, QST, I'm going to close this thing. We can talk after. Catch you later.